by for Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with your host, True Kirby.
Hey, this is Luke Holmes.
I am Morgan Wallen.
I'm Riley Green.
I'm Travis Denning.
Hey, I'm Aaron Lewis.
Hey, it's Luke Bryan.
I'm Tim McGraw.
What's up? This is Ian Munsick.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, and this time of year is a really important time of year. We always talk about how the season setting process for hunting is a year-long process, but we don't talk much about fishing and what goes into that. So today, Matt Hahn is with us. I know, Matt, you guys are out on the water quite a bit and really always surveying the layout and kind of what's going on.
Our field season essentially is from when the lakes thaw out until they freeze back up again. And then midwinter is a lot of the processing the data that we collected over the course of the summer, running it through models, comparing it with previous years, making management changes to stocking or regulations, things like that. Yeah, it's pretty much a year-round busy season for us.
So we talked during the hunting seasons that you have the check stations and you have all of these different ways that you're communicating with hunters. What are some of the things you guys do for fishing? And do you, obviously you don't have a check station a lot of times, but maybe you'll board boats and just kind of see what's going on?
Yeah, we do a couple different kinds of creel surveys, which is, you know, our version of a hunter check station. Usually our creel surveys are roving, where we go drive around and find anglers. We don't typically set up a check station and wait for them to come to us. It's easy to go drive around, hit the boat ramps, hit the shore anglers. If it's on the river, you know, wander up and down the river and find people that are fishing. And then we've got kind of a standard list of questions we ask. How long have you been fishing? What have you caught? What have you kept? What are you fishing for? Those types of things. And that allows us to calculate some different statistics. If we get a good enough sample size, several hundred people, we can look at the catch rate, the number of fish caught per hour, and we can compare that with previous year's surveys. And then we can compare that those numbers with our population numbers, where we do actually go sample fish, and everything should line up. Like if we think the fish population is trending up, we should see angler catch rate trending up as well.
I would assume it's got to be pretty fun to see all of this information come together and really develop into what it ends up being.
Yeah, as long as everything's good. It's frustrating when it's not developing the way you think it should be, because you made some management change, whether it's a change in species that you stocked or size or time of the year or something like that, where you're trying to solve a problem and you think, okay, if we do this, this should get better, and then it doesn't. And that can get frustrating, because now you're back to the drawing board trying to figure out, well, that wasn't the problem. Now what do we need to look at? And that usually kicks in more in-depth sampling and different ways of looking at data to try to solve whatever the issue is that we might be having.
If that is an issue, how do you reverse it and go back to before the problem? And how long does that take?
Well, it depends on the fishery. It can take several years to fully see the results of a management change. Like a good example is at the Glendoe fishery, where we put on a 15-inch minimum length limit on walleye I think it was 2012. And because walleye are a fairly long-lived species, you need to wait about 5 or 6 years to even evaluate that change, because, you know, just because you start that today, you know, there's fish that are older fish that didn't grow up under that regulation. And so those year classes were subjected to different levels of exploitation than the new ones that are protected. So you have to wait like 5 years to even start to evaluate it. And then on top of that, with a wild population like Glendoe, you've got a lot of year-to-year environmental variability, things like that. And so that just introduces more noise into the population. So you really need to look at it for multiple years to smooth all that out to actually get to what's going on. So it could be a 10-year process to fully evaluate, especially a regulation change on something like walleye. In a stock trout fishery, it's a lot quicker. You know, say we make a management change at Alcova, we change the number that we stocked, we can go back out in May and get a sample and get a really good idea of what our management change in the fall did that's following spring. So that happens on a much quicker time scale.
Yeah, it's so interesting how integral each decision you make is.
No, but it is. It's really fascinating to watch these guys roll. And I was lucky enough to be on the electrofishing boat with them this week. And people in town might be seeing that buzzing through over the next several weeks. And that is a part of what they do every fall. They do different stretches every other year and check to see how the fishery is doing. And
I really think it's fascinating, all the tools that are in the toolbox of Game and Fish and what it takes to really get that great look at how things are going. And Matt, can you give us a rundown from like start to finish what your process is and your thinking is on the electrofishing and all the data collecting really?
Well, so we have some standard sites that we do usually on an every other year basis. So there's like from Gray Reef down to Glen Rock, there's four standard sites. We do two a year and alternate years on which site gets done. And those are our population estimation stations. So we do the same reach or river every year for that purpose so that we can make direct comparisons with past years. There's other stuff we do, like when we were looking at hooking injury rates in trout in the river, where we were more or less sampling the whole river, but doing it, you know, like a mile and then skip downstream a few miles and do another mile and skip downstream, more of a systematic look at the whole system.
So really there's a method to the madness of it all. And I'm sure the fish are like, oh crap, here comes that boat again.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It is phenomenal to watch.
How long does this process take? I mean, you don't just float up and then float off.
Yeah, it usually takes us most of a day to go through one of our population stations. They're typically about 3 miles a river, and we stop every 400, 500, 600 yards. Usually, like, we go through a riffle, a pool, and through the tail out at the bottom of the pool. Then we go back and work up the fish in the pool and release them. Yeah, it's kind of an all-day process. You catch, it's usually, you know, one run will be anywhere from say 20 to 100 fish that we capture. Then we stop, weigh them, measure them, mark them, release them, then go down and start at the beginning of the next station and go down through that. And it's usually 8 or 10 different stations within one population estimate reach.
When it comes to the electrofishing, can you explain the process? Because, I mean, it's not harmful to the fish, right?
Right. If you're trained and know how to do it, you're not harming the fish. You certainly could. If you run the wrong settings, you can definitely kill fish with those. But it's direct current, not alternating current. So it's not like what comes out of your wall socket. It's more like what comes out of your car battery. It's pulsed. So it's not a continuous current. It's a pulsed current. And we have these boxes where we can adjust the frequency, so how many pulses per second. We can adjust the pulse width or the duty cycle. So if you're doing, you know, a pulse every 10 milliseconds, how many milliseconds within that 10 milliseconds is the power actually on or off? And so these are all things we can fine tune. We can adjust the voltage output as well. You're putting that into the water where the boat itself is the cathode, and then we have these anodes that hang off the front. The fish will orient themselves. If they get into the electric field, they orient themselves where they're facing the anode, and then the pulsed current causes them to swim towards the anode. So basically we're making them look at the anode and then swim towards it. And then when they come up to the surface, the netters on the front of the boat have a split second to net the fish before it breaks the field and it's gone. So as you're going down the river, you've got fish popping up, jumping out of the water in front of the boat, and the netters are up front trying to net these fish before they get away. And in a big river like the Platte, we might actually capture 3 to 5% of the fish in a given reach if we're lucky. with two boats. So it's effective in terms of we get our hands on a lot of fish, but if you look at it from the standpoint of the entire population in that reach, it's not terribly effective, which is why we do a mark recapture estimate. Like, we don't need to catch them all. We just need to figure out what proportion of them we did catch. And that's how we can calculate how many fish per mile are in the river.
So from the time when the process begins, they're netted, they're on the boat, they're measured, they're weighed, and then they're released right back into the water?
Mm-hmm.
So it really is a pretty quick process, and they're not harmed in the process at all, really.
No, we net them. We have a 100-gallon water tank on the boat, so the fish get netted out of the river, and they get put in that 100-gallon tank full of fresh water. And, you know, an electrofishing run is usually about 10 to 15 minutes. At the end of that point, we stop. The fish are moved in a basket into the river. So, you know, they're back in running fresh water. When we weigh them and measure them, we anesthetize them with a fish anesthetic is what it's made for. And it makes them basically go to sleep so we can weigh them and measure them, handle them without stressing them. So they're not flopping around. They're not stressed. They're just sleeping. And we can weigh them and measure them, give them a little mark, little notch that we cut out of the bottom of a fin so that we can identify that fish if we recapture it later. And then they go back into the river into a pen until they recover. And once they recover and they're all upright swimming around and good to go, we tip the net tub over and they all swim away.
When they determine these reaches, they look for things that may block the fish from getting back to where they need to be. So they don't go over a fish passage blockage for whether that's a riffle that's really shallow or some other sort of block that the fish can't swim around or get past. So they do those relatively short passes so that we're not displacing the fish. So we're not hauling them all downriver and letting them all go in one place so that there's no fish back upstream. And so those are things that everybody really thinks through. And it's a little bit more scientific than how I just said it, but it is pretty neat, all the things that they think about that goes into this.
It is. And it's just more information to go right into the pool of information that benefits what we do, all the fishing around here. And I know that there are lots of different methods that are used, but I think this is one of those important ones that people see and they freak out a little bit about because they think that the fish are being sacrificed, really. You know, you're shocking them and killing them, but that's not it at all. It goes to benefit the future of what the fishing's like around here.
Absolutely. Super helpful. And we're appreciative of all of our fisheries biologists across the state who are giving up their hunting seasons right now to be making sure that our fisheries are good.
Yep. So kids, if you're thinking about the future, you know, start working on it now because there's a lot that goes into it. We were joking before we went on about eighth grade math, but, you know, some of the stuff that we've talked about, eighth grade math comes into play when you're figuring up some of these totals. So
it does. And so does your CTE. For those of you guys at Pathways, the electrical stuff, everything is incredible. So pay attention.
Well, Matt, we appreciate all you do and all the sacrifices of your hunting seasons. And I sure hope you get a little bit of hunting time.
I got two kids that I have to take antelope hunting tomorrow. So
we'll okay.
Some hunting in.
All right. Well, Matt, thanks again. Janet, we will talk soon.
Take care, Drew.
Thanks, Drew.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew along with Brian Woodward at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, where, Brian, we finally had a nice snap of cold, and I hope this really is the way the future is going to roll.
Yeah, we definitely could use the moisture, and it makes us feel like fall and winter's around the corner.
Yeah, you and I have been talking a little bit about the prices of Thanksgiving turkeys. You know, we have a whole month and a half, but if you're going to get it, you might as well get it now and put it in the freezer. Or, you know, you guys have a full section of turkey hunting gear.
Yeah, we have turkey hunting gear. There's lots of general turkey areas around, ammunition, firearms. You probably already own one that'll take care of the job. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, don't dismiss that the fact that you can go out and shoot your own turkey and avoid some of those high prices.
Yeah, it's crazy the way that the prices have really gone up on that turkey. And is it supply and demand? Is it, you know, people trying to take advantage or whatever? But
turkey striking.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tom striking on the picket line. He's not playing this game anymore. But you know what? It's simple because you can come into Rocky Mountain and get your tags.
Yeah, we sell again general tags for certain areas. We've got all the processing equipment and all the camo and gear that you possibly could need.
And I will reiterate the fact you can't shoot the ones in town.
Unfortunately.
I know we joke about that a lot, but there are people that are like, well, I'm just going to shoot them right here.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that would like to shoot them right here.
Yeah. So we're getting ready in just a couple of weeks when waterfowl are going to be reopening the 1st of November. We're right in the middle of elk season and mule deer season and antelope. And boy, it's really looking good.
Yeah, we've had a ton of hunters in and out of here and a lot of good success stories. Abby, who we talked about last year, Noah's sister.
Yeah.
She shot a great bull last Monday. I got to help her haul that one out of there Monday morning. And so that doesn't help Noah's case, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, Noah is the kid. He's, what is he, 14 now, who helps out with the walleye and tournaments and everything. And he's a little jealous that his sister has killed a big bull 2 years in a row.
Well, she's drawn a tag 2 years in a row. Yeah. Nobody else can draw.
And they got her done. So if you're feeling down on yourself, you know, we have an opportunity for you to come in. Like if you didn't get the draw like you normally would, but you still need some new gear, there's a Friends and Family Day going on today, actually.
Yeah, you know, we usually just make this a special invite only, but for those of you listeners that spend your Sunday mornings listening to the show, we're going to throw that invite out to you. So this evening from 6 to 8, we are going to have a little friends and family night here at the store. The store is normally open 9 to 6. We're closing the doors to the general public, but for those of you listening, show up. We're going to have some great specials. We've got some appetizers, but there are definitely specials that we're not talking about on the radio, but you are definitely going to want to come in and see what it's all about.
Last year, I got my ammo for the year just because it was a good opportunity for me. You know, it's not one of those things I could convince the old lady to let me go out and do it unless it's a special day.
Yeah, well, and we did this time of year, you know, just, you know, before all the Black Friday specials go on. But basically, we had some people that, you know, wanted to make some maybe bigger purchases. This gives them an opportunity to save a little bit of extra percent off on their product. But it also allows them the opportunity to put it on layaway. So it gives them, you know, 6-7 weeks prior to Christmas to go ahead and put it on layaway, make some payments, and ease the blow if you're going to make a, you know, maybe a gun purchase or an optics purchase that, you know, is a little bit more than you normally would spend. Just to reiterate, this Friends and Family Night is going to be at the Casper location only this week. So sorry if you're from out of the area, because I know that sometimes this station reaches a little further than the Casper area. But this program is only for the Casper location for this evening.
You know, something we don't really talk about, and I've been looking and researching a lot, and I see a flyer here for safes. You guys have a full line of gun safes here. A big one for a guy that has a whole bunch of guns, and then the smaller ones for maybe a young person that doesn't have a whole lot.
Yeah, you know, we have everything from just, you know, your typical just metal cabinet, you know, it just has a lock on it or a key lock. You know, very minimal, you know, it gives you good protection, but, you know, it doesn't give you any fire rating and that kind of stuff. But we do have a big full line of Browning safes, you know, everything from like a 10 gun all the way to a 33 or a 49 gun. So depending on what your needs are, we can also special order those. So if you've seen a safe online that you really like, there is going to be some rebates going on with Browning safes here for the next month. So if you see a safe that you would like to order, we can certainly price it out for you and get it delivered either right to your house or back to here to the store.
Yeah, make sure you come in and check out Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. If it's not today, any day, open Monday through Friday, Monday through Sunday, mm-hmm. but then Sunday is 9 to 6, right?
Yeah, yeah. 8 to 8 every other day.
Yeah, so it's a great opportunity to come in, and if you're looking for that mid-season change, maybe your equipment's not working out, or maybe you went through a lot of equipment over the last couple of months, you can come on in and get that taken care of.
Well, this colder weather is definitely making us try on coats and stuff that maybe didn't fit so yeah. well, or boots that, you know, we outgrew, or maybe we just need a new pair of socks. So don't get stuck in the cold, and make sure that you've got the right gear, you know, when you're heading out.
Make sure to check it out, Rocky Mountain Discount Sports, rockymountainsports.com on the internet.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Drew and Brian back at Rocky Mountain Discount Sports. Again, you can always go and see the inventory if you're looking for certain firearms or maybe optics at rockymountainsports.com, and come on into the store too. And Brian, you were just telling me that you went out on a choppy Pathfinder the other day fishing's still rolling right along.
Well, we talked. If you wait for the weather to go do anything, you probably never do anything. And you know, I have generally Wednesdays off, and Wednesday it was ripping pretty good out at Pathfinder. But we still made it on the lake. It was some 4 and 5 foot rollers across the middle, but we did find some shorelines that we could fish, and fish had slid out a little bit deeper. I don't know if it was just weather conditions or the storm front that came through on Wednesday or Thursday night. But we still caught some fish. We caught, you know, like 9 walleyes, good quality walleyes, all pretty much over 15, and 2 20-inch rainbows that, you know, put on quite a little fight.
Yeah, it's, you may not be a trout fisherman, maybe you're walleye sometimes or whatever, but this summer I went out and just fished for trout one day or 2 days. And man, they're fun to get on to, and when those suckers come up out of the water, boy, you get a rise.
They are fun. I mean, of course, I think for most cases, you know, we've talked about this a little bit, and you know, I think for the most part, people don't, when they go fishing, they don't necessarily care what they're catching.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, right now you go down to Glendo and you're going to throw a spoon or a minnow or a worm or whatever you're going to do, and there's a good chance you're going to catch a walleye, but you could also catch catfish or a perch or a crappie. And last week I was down there, we caught a largemouth bass. So it's kind of fun. And, you know, I think if we sat there and caught largemouth bass all day, we wouldn't have cared. You know, we would have been, oh, right. This is cool. We're catching fish.
Yeah. Know? I mean, my dad would say, well, I'd hate for you to turn into a bass fisherman because you know how fun that is.
Yeah. Well, I always say, you know, the only ones that are bass fishing are the ones that don't know how to fish for walleye.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. You know, it's fun to jab at your fishing buddies and hunting buddies. And I know that it's been really busy on the hunting side of things, because now we've had that front come through, and I know there have been snow falling up in some of the mountains, and right. You know, so it really is kind of, people's minds have got to be teetering, because you're like, okay, well, I was having fun fishing in 70 to 80 degree days, and now we're starting to cool down, and I see elk, and then I see waterfowl in my future.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting, because, you know, this time of year, especially midweek, we see a lot of out-of-staters that are coming through, whether they're hunting on their own, you know, or they're hunting with an outfitter. But, you know, we get a little cold snap, you know, and they've been looking at the weather reports, and we've been in the 70s and 80s for the last, you know,
yeah,
who knows how long. And all of a sudden we get this cold snap, a little bit of snow, a little bit of rain. And now all of a sudden, like, these guys are coming here not prepared, buying their gloves, buying long underwear, you know, the base layer. It's kind of entertaining watching people. But, yeah, I mean, everybody's doing a little bit of everything. You know, the lakes, you know, quite a few boats, you know, down at Glendo every day, 20 to 40 probably. The antelope and deer hunters are just, you know, scrambling in the countryside, and we're seeing some really good, cool pictures of, you know, even some kids that have had, you know, good success this year.
Yeah, you know, and if you're in town and maybe you are a last minute person that came in and you're trying to get your kill and then get it processed, mm-hmm. that might be tough, because some of these processors I know, like Dan's and some of the others, are they're full at some points. And it may be a good idea to go ahead and, you know, cut it up and grind it yourself, and then zip it and pack it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big believer in our local processors. You know, Dan's is fantastic. You know, Pat's is sold, but there's new owners there, and I think they're doing a fantastic job also. But I've had quite a few people calling the store saying, hey, where can I go? Dan's is full. Pat's is full. You know, and they're not taking animals for a day or two because they just had so many come in. But being able to, especially with the colder weather, you know, to be able to hang some quarters in your garage and be able to process those at your own convenience by coming in and grabbing a, you know, a nice grinder, maybe a stuffer, what a slicer, whatever it is you need, we've got it. And we have a great selection of all of our LEM meat processing stuff in store. We just finally got our last shipment that we're going to kind of get for the year. But we've got, you know, all the high temp cheeses. You know, so if you're going to make your own sausages, anything that you can think of that you would need, whether the bags to stuff the meat, the meat lugs, the trays, we got some super awesome, dehydrators. And, you know, they used to have like a 5 and a 10 tray. Mm-hmm. Now I think we got a 16 tray dehydrator. Oh, wow. Yeah. So, man, if you want to get some jerky process in a quick fashion, man, it looks like that's going to be one of the great units.
Yeah. So if you're in a hurry and maybe you're heading back out of town, maybe on another trip or something, and you can't get your elk in or your deer in, you might as well come in. And that's a great investment, because that's something that you pay now and then use it for a few years and then upgrade. So.
I mean, and I've seen guys that, you know, buddies that, you know, typically hunt together and that kind of stuff, they're kind of sharing the expense. You know, they're coming in and buying it all up, and guys are pulling a couple $100 out each. Yeah. And they're splitting the cost to try to, you know, keep it to a minimum.
Yeah, and you know what? Might as well try it, because you may like it.
Yeah.
Maybe a new hobby.
Right. Well, and you know where it's coming from, and, you know, I mean, it's a great way to, you know, get down to your roots of, you know, just, you know, supplying for your family.
Yep. Well, so get out, enjoy it, no matter what you're hunting, fishing, or just out enjoying nature.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.
It's Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors, and the third option of our title is what we're going to feature today, the outdoors part of it. You know, we talk a lot about hunting and fishing on the show, but there are options around our area that give you the advantage to be outside and enjoy the outdoors, and Casper Mountain has a great bunch of trails that you can go up and ride your mountain bike on, or hike, or just go out and lay in the grass if you want. But we have a group of kids in Camber, the Casper Area Mountain Biking Youth Racing Team. So we have a team of kids, and we have a whole group of them with us today that have been battling it out with other kids across Colorado over the last few months and few weeks, and have been practicing all summer and ready for state, which is coming up. And who are we talking to first today?
Me. I'm Autumn Altland, and I'm the senior at Kelly Walsh.
Autumn, how long have you been part of Camber?
I've been on this team since I was a freshman. Got introduced to it when my oldest sisters first got on it, and so we've kind of just been a part of it since then.
So it's kind of a family tradition then, that's passed down from sister to sister?
Yep.
When you're going and kind of looking up to your sisters as they're doing this, what have you learned to do better than they did when they were part of it?
I've kind of learned to just have fun, and it is a serious thing, but it comes to a certain extent, and you don't need to take it as seriously as you might think.
Right, and I've seen a lot of pictures. You guys do like to have fun, and you like to just, you know, show off your abilities and your skills and compete against other people. And what do you feel is your strongest part of your ride and your race, Autumn?
The strongest part is, like, the end, because you kind of just, you have that thought, like, oh, my gosh, I'm so close to the end. Like, I can just make it. So you kind of just give your all. It just helps you get to the finish quicker.
What are you going to do now as you graduate high school and move on?
I plan to go into nursing and just stay at Casper College for now. And I'll just continue to mountain bike. That's like kind of the nice thing about mountain biking. You can just do it whenever.
Very good. Well, good luck to you, Autumn, as you wrap up your final year and continued success in college. And Janet, who do we got next?
Next is Mr. Bosco, Braden Bosco.
Camber has meant a whole lot to a whole lot of people throughout the years. And how are you feeling about heading into state and, you know, kind of wrapping up the season?
I'm feeling good. Overall, I don't really want the season to end just because the team dynamic overall this year, I feel like, is the best compared to last year when I started. I'm sad to see these guys go. We're going to have a lot less people on the team, which is going to make the bonds stronger in a way. But it, like you said, having fun at the practices, I don't think they're going to be as much fun as they used to be.
Right. So how many more years do you have? Are you a junior or sophomore?
I'm a junior, so I'll have this year and then next year.
You've learned from these other guys that'll be kind of moving on. And even with Autumn, I'm sure that you've picked some things up from everyone that's been here a little longer than you have. And what's your strong point? And, you know, how'd you figure out what was going to be your strong point?
I want to say, just like Autumn said, the sprint finishes for sure.
When you guys get geared up for that, I mean, are you doing all kinds of cardio to get your heart rate and get your lung capacity built up?
Oh, yeah. So we do two weeks at the beginning of – everybody trains throughout the summer, but the designated start of practice, we do 2 weeks of what's called Hell Week. And that's just pure running. It's insane. It's complete torture.
I feel wore out just hearing you talking about it. It seems like kind of a wild time. And you guys do quite a few races. So almost every weekend you're kind of out – if you're not going to a race, you guys are practicing, and you've all been part of helping build the Casper trails on the mountain. So being on your bike and being outdoors is something pretty important to you.
For sure, for sure.
Where do you see yourself in just a couple of years when your time here is over?
Mainly, I want to get picked up by a college and hopefully either bike or Nordic ski for them. And then, right. I don't know, after college, we'll just find out what happens.
What's your prediction for the rest of the season?
I feel like we're going to do good. We've been building up and building up throughout the season. Overall, I just feel like it's going to be definitely a good way to end it.
Good luck to you. And I hope you finish the season exactly how you want and come back and guide people next year as the youngsters are going to come in and look at you and you help them along.
Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, one of the guys that looked up to you and will look up to you again next year is a freshman, Doug. And Doug, tell me a little bit about your experience and your time here.
Yeah, sure. So this year it's been really fun to get to know some of the other racers and to bike.
Which school do you go to?
I go to NC.
So is it a little different being out on these trails with maybe folks that you aren't in school with or maybe you haven't known very long?
I'd say sort of, yeah. It's not too different, but it is different in a way.
Since you're one of the younger guys, how has the process been for you figuring out the whole Camber situation?
So it's been a bit challenging to get the basics down since I haven't really done mountain biking before this, but I am getting the hang of it now. Now that I've been on it for a few months now.
Do you feel pretty confident on the bike? I know, you know, being around other riders can maybe be intimidating at times, but have you picked up that confidence that you need?
Yeah, I've picked up the confidence I need to race.
And Doug, with you being one of the young ones that's on the team now, how do you feel about really being a leader and one of the ones with more experience when the younger folks come in?
So the way I'd go about giving mentorship to some of the younger people that might be joining the team next year is looking at what the coaches did to me with some of their advice and pass down that advice to some of the younger people that are joining the team.
You've only been on the team a short time. What have you found to be some of the most difficult aspects?
Going uphill is definitely a little more difficult, yeah, but I feel like I have been able to get some progress done on that portion of my riding as well.
Nice job, Doug, and good luck to you the rest of the season.
Thank you.
Next up is Sebastian. Sebastian is all the way from Germany and riding on Camber. And Sebastian, how has that been for you? Have you adjusted okay?
It's a lot of fun, and I like to drive the mountain bike at the trails. So much fun, yeah.
Is it a little different on your body than it was back home?
Yeah, there are some difference. For example, now I feel so much stronger on the bike than before the whole practice and the races, and I learned something. I learned to handle better my bike.
Did you ride before you came here, or did you join when you got here?
Yeah, I just ride with some friends, but I never was in a real mountain bike team and never did the race before.
So do you think you'll continue to ride when you go back home?
Yeah, if I'm back in Germany, I want to join the mountain bike team from my town.
Well, very good. And we do appreciate all the kids taking time to be here and be on the show. And now we're going to jump to the twins. And the first twin is Elsie. Elsie, tell me a bit about yourself.
Hi, I'm Elsie. I'm a senior, and this is my third year mountain biking on the team.
You've been doing it 3 years. You feel pretty confident sticking with it?
Yes, I have. I think it's a lot of fun. Yeah, it's like autumn. I have two older sisters who are on the team, and they've all did it and loved it. And so it was kind of a no-brainer to decide just sticking with it and being a part of the team.
How does the sibling rivalry go? When you're not out with Camber, are you out with your sisters riding and racing?
Definitely against my sister, and just trying to keep up. Like this year, we kind of go back and forth. She's beat me most of the races, but in previous years, like I've beat her, and it's fun. It's a fun competition.
So what's your future look like? What are your goals, and does it have anything to do with mountain biking?
I'll stay at Casper College and pursue a degree in engineering. But yeah, I'll definitely keep mountain biking as a hobby and maybe like explore different types of biking, like gravel riding, but definitely like mountain biking for sure. Stick with it.
Personally, how do you think that you have evolved over the last couple of years with Camber?
Being more confident in myself and knowing I can do hard things and push through things like that. Yeah, that's one of the biggest things that's helped me, not even in biking, just in life, just doing hard things.
What advice would you give a young girl that may be looking at getting into Camber?
Put yourself out there. And so I never raced before high school, and I was just a hobby, but it's really cool to watch yourself develop over the years. And like, it's completely different from any other team sport I've been a part of, which is really cool, especially like with K-Dub and NC being combined. There's no, there might be a little rivalry, but since we're together, it's really cool to just be a part of a team like that.
Very good. Thank you so much. Now we're going to move over to your twin sister, Quincy. And Quincy, you have really developed. You've done well in the races. You were just named one of the athletes of the week. And how's it going for you? I mean, are you feeling pretty confident?
Yeah, the season's been going really well. I've had a lot of fun. I'm sad for it to be ending this week, but it's been really good to see how well the season's gone.
What are some of the things that you have picked up and you will take away from your time in Camber?
Something I've picked up over the past couple of years is definitely my mentality. How you think about this sport and how you think about hard work is definitely going to change your whole mindset and like aspect of the whole sport. Like, I've definitely had a really good attitude this year about racing and just going out there and having fun, which definitely changes the way you race and the way you look just at life in general. So that's been a really cool part.
With Camber, there's a real team atmosphere, and you guys spend a lot of time together at competitions and at practices. And do you feel that you've really grown closer to those that are on the team with you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Getting to spend time with all of our teammates, like at races and camping, it's definitely really fun, and you get to learn a lot about all your teammates. And by the end of the season, you basically become family with all of them. So,
Quincy, what will you do once you finish school and move on?
I'll do the same thing as my twin sister, and I'll go to Casper College and also get a degree in engineering.
Since you guys have been on the team for a while now, is there anything that you would look back and tell yourself as a young girl advice about Camber?
Something I would tell myself was to not take any of the time for granted and to like cherish all the time you have with your teammates and just being outside on your bike. This year's definitely been like emotional for me because I enjoyed it, but I didn't realize how special those moments were that I got to spend with everyone.
Well, it's really cool that you get to do it, A, with your sister, but then it sounds like you you guys have made a really good family team, and it's cool to see that. So good luck to you, and congratulations on a good season.
Thank you.
And finally, we'll wrap it up with brother Sam and Will. And Sam, how do you feel this season has gone along for you?
I've personally felt like this season's been really great, personally for me and collectively as a team. I've seen all of us improve a lot, and everybody has gone from being good to excellent, and I've kind of seen that in all my teammates.
Yeah, I'd have to say the same thing. I think this is, like, in my opinion, my favorite and best season so far. It's just like everyone's improved greatly, the team's improved, and then it's just like so much fun. Every race, every practice is just like, it's just so fun.
You can definitely tell the passion. I know that it's been one of those things that you guys have really enjoyed. And Sam, how does it feel that it's about over?
For me personally, not having been a part of the team as long as some other kids have, it's really hit me harder because I'm kind of reflecting on how I wish I could have done it earlier. But looking back on it, I'm just going to have fun this race. And really, no matter how low, how high I place, I just want to appreciate this last moment that I have with my team.
And I'd have to agree with Sam there. Like, it's going to be hard because it's like a last race, but I'm just going to go at it and have fun and just really appreciate like this last race and just make sure it's a good one.
Well, it sounds like things went in the right direction this year, and it went fast because it seems like we were just talking about your fundraising barbecue not long ago, but it's hard to believe that the season end is here. So good luck to all of you, and good luck in your futures, and we can't wait to see how Camber keeps building because of what you guys have done over the last few years.
Thank you, Drew.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank all of you for spending time with us today on the show. And you can go and hear a longer version of these interviews as time constraints kind of play a big factor on the show. And you can listen on demand at the radio station's app to find out more about these kids. And I know that thanking the community for being a part of Camber is one of the things that they really want to stress because the community has really reached out and been a part of it, and sponsorships and backing has been fantastic. So, again, on behalf of Camber, they really want to make sure that the community knows that they appreciate everything that was done.
Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors with Drew Kirby. If you have a question, want to make a comment, or have an idea for a show topic, message us on the My Country mobile app. Wyoming Hooking and Hunting Outdoors.